Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. Episode 164 of CJ Evolution. Pat Fitzgibbons here, host and creator of the show. Whatever you're doing, wherever you're at, thank you for tuning in. Happy holidays to everyone out there. I hope you have a great, safe holiday season. And let us not forget the first responders out there working every holiday as well as every day of the week, protecting us day in and day out. Thank you for what you do. You know, law enforcement is one of the most important, most complex, most demanding, most challenging, and most rewarding professions in society today. It is a profession of courageous men and women who are committed to serving their communities at the highest level and want to be great at what they do. Very excited to have Brian Willis on the show. If you don't know who he is an amazing guy. He's a speaker, trainer, and writer. He spent a lot of time in law enforcement, and he's helping educate and train the next generation. So I hope you enjoy this great episode with the one and only Brian Willis. Welcome back, everybody. Very excited to have Brian Willis on the show today. If you don't know who Brian is, he's an internationally recognized thought leader, speaker, trainer, and writer. Brian also serves as a deputy executive director for the International Law Enforcement Educators and Trainers Association and is the president of the training company Winning Mind Training. Brian, welcome, sir. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Patrick. Appreciate the opportunity.
And Merry Christmas to you and your family and everybody else who's listening out there. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Likewise.
Well, Brian, you have done and continue to do so much for the law enforcement field. I mean, what prompted you to start on this journey? I'm talking about what you're doing now with law enforcement and what keeps you going?
Well, you know, in the latter part of my career, I guess the mid part of my career, I had a bit of a change. I was hoping to go in one path, and as a result of some things that happened, I ended up taking a different direction, got interested in training, got into our training section, spent the last part of my career with the Calgary Police Service as in a full-time training capacity as a sergeant running a unit of highly motivated people. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of success, and I just got very passionate about the topic of training and mental preparation, mental conditioning. And then as I moved into retirement after 25 years as a full-time police officer, then I just continued down that path, and it's continued to grow, and it's morphed ever since. It's been changing as to what I've been talking about or what my focus has been. Mm-hmm. There's a couple things that have been consistent throughout, but I guess what keeps me going is I see the heroic men and women of our profession, mm-hmm. Great people who show up every day to serve, and if I can serve them and give a little bit back to them through some of the training and the thoughts and the ideas that I have, then that's really what motivates me and keeps me going.
Mm-hmm. And it's very fulfilling. I'm part of the training in my agency, and I'm part of the recruitment. And like you said, Brian, it's so cool, and it gets me very motivated when I see these young, you know, brave men and women coming onto the force, and they're so eager and they're so hungry to do a good job. And it's very fulfilling, you know, to be part of that.
Absolutely, it is. I think we have so many great people in the profession, and we need to celebrate that. And we have so many great people coming into, and especially now when we've been getting beat up pretty bad in the media for the last mm-hmm. couple of years, but we still have people that want to be part of this profession, people that want to serve. And that to me is very inspiring. And we have so many great people at all levels of the profession. And I just have enjoyed the opportunity to meet them and work with them as I travel around North America.
Yeah. And you mentioned the media, this profession, you know, Brian, gets beat up a lot in the media, but I'm a firm believer, and I'm sure you are, that we have so much support out there in the country, Canada, North America, for law enforcement. I just think, you know, some people just tend to see the negative in the media and they just focus on that, but I'm a firm believer that there's so much support out there for these brave men and women in law enforcement.
And I think that's what we as a profession need to focus on. We need to understand that the small group of very vocal people that get a lot of time on a 6 o'clock news, mm-hmm. That they don't speak for the majority. The majority of people trust law enforcement. The majority of people believe in law enforcement. The Gallup poll that came out at the end of 2016 showed the highest trust rating of law enforcement in the United States since 1974, I believe it was. And that was across all demographics. And I think we as a profession need to be cautious about buying into the us versus them, and that think that that small group of very vocal anti-police people speak for the majority, because they do not.
Exactly. And, you know, how do we get some of that? Because there's no doubt, Brian, you know this, that some of that trust in law enforcement has been eroded. I don't believe for a minute all of it has, no matter what people say. But can we get that back? Can we get that back?
I think we can. I think we need to understand, first of all, that we haven't lost it everywhere, but I think we can get it back. I think there's a couple of key things that we need to do. I think we need courageous leadership that needs to do a better job of controlling the narrative. We're allowing other people to control the narrative, and very often it's a false narrative. Mm-hmm. And we need courageous leaders that, after a critical incident, are not going to hide behind the veil of no comment, that will stand up and talk about the facts as we know them and talk about the things that led to the incident and be willing to voice their support for their officers, be willing to, when the facts and once the investigation is done, and if the facts show that we acted inappropriately, then come out and say that as well. But I think the other thing we need to do is, as a profession, we need to understand that we all own a piece of this. What one of us does, good or bad, reflects on all of us. And I think what we need is to do as a profession is more, have more positive face-to-face non-enforcement interactions with general citizens in our communities. Get out of our car. Stop and talk to somebody who's sitting on their porch. Stop and go in and talk to a business owner, and just a non-enforcement face-to-face to get to know people in the communities. And I think when we do that, and the research supports that, that when we do that, then it enhances the trust of the police and the perceptions of the police. But it, the other thing it does for us is it makes us realize that there's a lot of great people that live in our communities and people that support us. And so I think if we could just get out of our cars, realize that this trust issue is something that is all of our responsibility. It's not just the community policing group or those community officers. It's the responsibility for all of us. And when we accept that responsibility, then we can take action and continue to build that trust in our communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. I mean, community policing is not going away. It's here to stay. And I agree with you. Whenever there's something, a critical incident, we have, that's the perfect time, like you said, Brian, to get out there and talk to people and connect them. Are we going to connect with everybody? Probably not. But we need to get out more, like you said. I mean, I'm fortunate to be in a small agency, small community. We have a lot of trust within the department. The community supports us, but we're so active in the community, and that is so important these days. Like you said, to get out and just talk more, and don't run away from the problems. We have to go at them head on.
Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of things that we can do as a profession that, you know, it's, we need to use social media properly. There's some agencies like Mountain View Police Department in California do it very, very well. They connect with their communities in a lot of different ways, but it's meaningful and it's ongoing. And it's not just throwing up a Facebook page and nobody tending to it. So there's that social media aspect. But again, I think it's we're so conditioned to drive around in our cars and everything that is going to come across the computer. We just need to get out of our cars and talk to people and start to build those relationships one non-enforcement contact at a time. And when we have enforcement contacts, take our time and embrace the power of unconditional respect and treat people with respect and be willing to take the time and listen to people. And that'll go a long way towards building that trust and building those relationships.
Yeah, great point. Great advice. So many challenges out there, Brian. You know that. Speaking to the choir, you say law enforcement is one of the most important, most complex, most demanding, most challenging, and most rewarding professions in society today. And I agree with that. What do you think? I think we hit on some of the challenges that we're facing today. What other challenges do you think law enforcement is facing in the future?
I think two things. Number one is we need to get over this mentality of, well, that's the way we've always done it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. We can't afford to wait for it to break. And so we need to be continually thinking differently about how we can lead and how we can engage our communities, how we can engage our people, how we can do our job better. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the other big challenges facing us as a profession is leadership. And I think we need to embrace leadership as a culture, not just as a course. I think we need to start teaching leadership at the recruit level and teach it at all levels throughout the organization and give people the leadership skills and abilities through training to set them up for success. I think one of the things we've historically done in law enforcement is we've confused rank and promotion with leadership. And leadership has nothing to do with rank. And rank, position, and title put you in a leadership position. They do not make you a leader. Mm-hmm. But for a long time, we've had this mentality, well, here's your stripes, here's your bars, here's your stars, so now you are a leader. And we need to change that. And we need to start making leadership part of the culture of our organizations, teach it at all levels, and continue to build on it. And so, because I think that that leadership void that we face in some areas of our profession is one of the ongoing and big challenges that we're facing.
I agree. And I was laughing because I constantly say that, Brian. I spent most of my life in a uniform, military, law enforcement. And I couldn't agree with you more. Just because you have rank out there does not mean that you're a leader. There's a great book out there, Brian, I don't know if you ever heard of it, called The Leader That Had No Title. And it's by Robin Sharma. And he talks about this, that some of the best leaders out there in organizations, law enforcement too, don't have any title. I'm sure you've worked with officers that in your career, and I know I have, and they were some of the best leaders I knew. You know, and you don't have to have that formal title to be a leader. I agree with you 100%.
Absolutely. And I think what the other thing is, some of the most influential leaders in organizations do not have that formal rank or title. Now, some of them are doing great things and leading people down a very positive path, but some of them are leading people in a different direction. And so we just need to get over that that belief that leadership is about rank, position, and title, and embrace the concept that everybody in a law enforcement organization is in a position to lead, and right. then challenge them to do so.
I agree with you 100%. You did a great talk on WinX in 2015 where you talk about the secret of what's important now. Can you talk about that and elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yes. What's important now is a question that I refer to as life's most powerful question. And about 15 or 16 years ago, I was reading a book by Lou Holtz, a famous former college football coach, called Winning Every Day. And about the same time, I was watching a couple of videos of talks that Lou Holtz had done on life lessons and leadership lessons. And in the book and in those talks, he talked about that question. And it struck me as a question that if we started to ask ourselves that question, what's important now, then it can become a very powerful question for us because it will help to guide the decisions that we make. And this, I think, is one of the big challenges as well, is that there's a lot of pressure on us as a profession to focus on de-escalation and disengagement. I think those are the wrong Ds. I think what we need to look at is decision making. Mm-hmm. And I think the question, what's important now, when we ask that question, it starts to help us to make better decisions. And the reason I believe it's life's most powerful question is two reasons. Number one, it's simplicity. So it's just three words, what's important now, represented by the acronym WIN. It's easy to use, easy to remember. Now we need to understand that there's a difference between simple and easy. Simple is lack of complexity, and easy is lack of effort. These things take work, they take effort. But the fundamental principles of leadership and excellence and high performance are not complex. Mm-hmm. But the other element of it is the second element of it is its diversity and application. So it's being taught around North America in all elements of law enforcement training. It's being taught in recruit academies as a decision-making tool. There's coaches teaching it to youth groups, teachers teaching in the classroom. I've had a couple of Olympic athletes, one that I worked with directly, one that reached out to me that I'd never met, that his grandfather had taught him the concept of what's important now, and he used it in his bid to become an All-American with North Carolina State and then to make the U.S. Olympic team. I've had people that have used it to battle cancer and illness and disease. And so it's a simple question that when we start to apply this question, then we can start to make better decisions. And so if we continue to ask ourselves this question 10 or 20 or 30 times every day, what's important now? Because we make choices about our attitude, about whether or not we work out, about whether we read or engage in personal growth activities. We make choices about how we treat people. And if we just ask ourselves this question, it's amazing the clarity that it brings to the situation and the ability that it provides for us to make better decisions. Now, I think when we combine it with a second question, what's the right thing to do? And when we combine those two questions, what's important now, what's the right thing to do? From a leadership perspective, from a personal a decision-making perspective, I think then we can start to make some very good decisions. And if we were just teach those two questions to people in our organization, starting at the recruit level, then and get people to start to embrace that philosophy, then we're going to make some pretty darn good decisions. And so what's important now is we need to embrace that leadership as a culture. We need to start thinking differently about some of these elements of our profession.
It's such good, and you know, like you said, it's so simple. But you know, sometimes it's so hard to, like, you know, to put into practice. I imagine, at least for even, I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking as you were talking, okay, what's important to me now as a member of my administration, and you've been there, Brian, too. I mean, so many things come up at the last minute, and you're kind of getting stretched, and you know, many different directions. But it's so simple, like you said. Okay, prioritize. What is the thing that you need to do now? Yeah, it's very simple.
Absolutely, because there's only one thing that we can focus on individually at a time. And if we ask that question, what's important right now, then what's interesting is that the answers that come to us aren't based on personal gratification. It's the ability of our mind to process a lot of information and then make a decision that's going to have a positive, lasting impact. And if we as law enforcement professionals, people in formal leadership positions, if we ask ourselves this question, even just from a personal development standpoint every day, like I said, it's amazing the clarity that it brings. And I'm always amazed at the stories I hear from people all around North America when they share the stories about how they've used the question in their life, that it's a simple question, but it's a very powerful tool to help us to make far better decisions on a day-to-day basis.
And you're very in what you're exactly right. I mean, I think multitasking is a misnomer. It doesn't exist. We have to focus on one thing at a time. I think that's kind of, you know, that's the way I was raised. You got to multitask. You got to be able to do this, this, and this. But you're exactly right. You have to focus on one thing at a time. What's important now? You talk a lot about harnessing the mind and enhancing performance through harnessing the power of the mind, which I that is amazing. I love that. Can you talk about this more, and why is it so important?
Absolutely. And I think that the mental side of training, we hear all the time about mental toughness, about mental preparation, about mental conditioning. But I think historically in law enforcement, we've just really paid lip service to it. If you look at the top athletes in the world, what separates number one from number five or number 10 or number 20 is not physical skills. It's not training. It's not conditioning. It's what's between the ears. It's their mental preparation. And it's the same for us in law enforcement. And if we can find a way to harness that through things like imagery, and imagery is something that we use all the time. So we, when we're doing things like if then, when then thinking, that's a form of imagery. If I'm asking myself, if this was to happen, then what could I do? I'm in my conscious mind thinking about and I'm brainstorming, thinking about different options. But as I work through them and realize, you know what, when this happens to me and now accepting that it's going to, and this is what I would most like to do, now I ingrain that in my subconscious mind. So when I get thrust into that situation, the more work we've done to ingrain them, the most desirable programs at the subconscious level, then the greater our ability to perform at the highest levels when we get thrust into a situation where there's very little discretionary time, where we just have to respond. Mm-hmm. And it can be as simple as when you get on an airplane and everybody hears the same safety spiel from the flight attendants every flight. But the research shows that the people that pay attention to that actually perform best in critical situations. Mm-hmm. So when you get on an airplane, if you physically count the number of seats that you would need to touch going forward and going back in the case of an emergency to get to the closest emergency exits, and you just imagine, okay, this is what I need to do. You rehearse popping your seatbelt. People say, why do we need to rehearse getting out of the seatbelt? Because it's a different release mechanism than the seatbelt in your car, which mm-hmm. you use hundreds of times every month. And if you imagine getting out of that and moving forward and touching those seats going forward, touching those seats going backwards, then if there and when there is an emergency on that plane and the plane is in complete darkness and you can't see those emergency lights that they always talk about, you're going to perform better getting out. Mm-hmm. We do the same thing. thing. Tactical teams rehearse mentally before they ever execute a raid or a warrant. And they go through their operational plan. This is a primary point of access. This is a secondary point of access. If we get jammed up here, this is what we're going to do. If the first man through the door goes down, then this is how we're going to respond. This is how we're going to deal with that. And I've talked to officers that have been in all kinds of situations that they talk about the power of that mental rehearsal, that when something happened, when they got shot, when something else happened, then they said, you know what, I'd rehearsed enough times in my mind that when I got shot, in my mind I'd been there, done that, won that situation before, and I stayed in the fight and I won the fight and made sure I went home to my family afterwards. So the mental preparation in ingraining those most desirable programs at the subconscious level is something that we cannot afford to just pay lip service to. Mm-hmm. It has to be a critical part of our training. In fact, with our training unit, when I was with the Calgary Police Service, if my commander would have said, okay, you can only teach physical skills or you can only teach mental skills, but you can't teach both, I would have only taught the mental side. Because if your mind is right, you'll always find a way physically to fix it. But if your mind shuts down, it doesn't matter what you have for tools or tactics. If your mind's not working at its highest level, then all of those tools and tactics are going to be of limited use to you. Right. So I think it's the tapping into that imagery, the importance of mastering the conversations, the self-talk that we have, that internal dialogue, understand the importance of language. All of these things are absolutely critical in preparing the mind to perform at the highest levels.
But why aren't we, I can't speak for everybody out there, but I know where I'm at, Brian. Why aren't academies teaching this? Because I agree with you. I think it's so important. Why is it just we're not spending the time we need to with this important information? We're so focused, and it's all important. I'm not saying, but why aren't we doing what you're doing more and saying we need to just look at our mind and how we're thinking and kind of change our way of thinking sometimes. Why aren't we doing that more?
I think part of it is just that goes back to the way we've always done it. This is the way we've always done it. And I think we are somewhat afraid of the unknown and afraid of change in law enforcement. And the old joke with law enforcement with cops is that cops hate two things. We hate change and we hate the way things are.
Exactly right.
So I think we're uncomfortable with that change because we don't necessarily know what it is that we need to do. And it's just a matter of reaching out, doing some research, talking, reading about the sports psychology, talking to sports psychologists, talking to people that do this type of work. And understanding, because the other argument that I hear all the time is, well, we don't have time to do that. And the answer to that is we don't have time not to. Mm-hmm. And it does not take a huge amount of time. It's easy once we understand the fundamentals. And again, it goes back to it's simple, but it's not easy. It's when we understand the fundamental elements, we can weave it into our program and it does not take up any more time. In fact, we can make better use of our time if we understand and start to harness some of these simple tactics for harnessing the subconscious mind and ingraining them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just a matter of changing our language, changing the way that we conduct debriefings, building in some of these imagery sessions into our training. And agencies that have done that and trainers that have done that have had huge success. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why the best athletes in the world, why every Olympic athlete and the top athletes in the world all spend a huge amount of time on the mental side of their game. There's a reason why special operations people in the military embrace that mental side of it because it's so critical. And we as in law enforcement just need to start thinking differently about how we can enhance this and realize that if we don't know, then that's okay. Let's go find out, get the information, and start to weave it into what we do.
Excellent. I about a year and a half ago, I started meditating. And it's made all the difference in the world. And I've told a couple of my officers that I work with about meditation, a while ago, and they kind of laughed at me until they started doing it. And I think it's made a difference for them. And it all goes back into what you're talking about, strengthening your mind and being in tune and engaging in that mindfulness.
Absolutely. And the biggest challenge, and we're starting to see a lot of people talking about and teaching mindfulness in law enforcement, and the biggest challenge that they have is around language. And it's a matter of coming up with a language that we can use to sell people, to have them understand that this is really, it's an officer safety issue. And when we can prepare our mind, when we can implement some of these, again, simple strategies to prepare the mind, it's going to allow us to perform at the highest levels. And that's truly an officer safety issue. And it might be a skill or a tactic that might just save your life and allow you to use all of the physical skills and tools that you have.
Now, you talk to a lot of law enforcement professionals, Brian. I mean, I'm sure you come across men and women who are unwilling to invest in themselves and to continue to grow. I mean, how can you overcome this? Or what are some, you know, what advice would you give people to that are just kind of resistant? And every agency has them that, you know, just don't want to invest in themselves. They don't want to grow.
Well, I think, first of all, we need to understand that it is an investment. And what people need to understand is that if I'm going to abdicate the responsibility for training to an agency or an organization, and you and I hear that all the time, people say, you know what, if it's not on the company time and it's not on company dime, I ain't doing it. And if I'm going to abdicate the responsibility for training to the agency, then we need to understand that we're also abdicating the responsibility for our safety and well-being, the safety and well-being of everybody that we're going to work with, the safety and well-being of the public that we have sworn to serve and protect, to the agency, and that's highly inappropriate. And the reason why it's highly inappropriate is that I can guarantee you that there never has been and there never will be a law enforcement agency that's ever been killed or injured in the line of duty, because agencies don't go to calls. Agencies don't get hurt. They don't get killed. You go down to Washington, D.C., go to the National Memorial and look at the wall, and what's on the wall is names of officers. There is not a single name of an agency on the wall. So we need to embrace that it is an investment. But we also need to change that culture within agencies, because we do nothing to ensure as an organization, as a profession, that we get a return on investment. Mm-hmm. We send people to training programs all the time, and nobody ever asks me while I'm going to that training program, that week-long training program, multiple-week training program, while I'm earning a degree. Nobody ever says to me, Brian, what did you learn? What are you learning? How are you applying what you're learning? What can we do to ensure that, or to create opportunities for you to share what you're learning? So we send people to, and this is why when we look at leadership, in most agencies, leadership is a course. It's not a culture. We send you on a leadership course, internal or external. You tick off the box to say that you've got it, and now you're eligible for promotion or eligible for special units. But nobody ever says, Patrick, what did you learn? What are you applying it? What feedback do you have for me? Mm-hmm. We send people to 10-week programs at Northwestern School of Staff and Command, the National Academy, and nobody ever asks those people, the majority of people that go to those lengthy programs, what did you learn? How are you applying it? What are we doing to ensure that we get a return on investment? So we need to, as a profession, we need to make this shift. We need to focus on education and not degrees. It's just to say to somebody, well, you need a degree to get promoted to this rank, and we don't care what you have a degree in. What's the value in that? If we say to somebody, what are you learning? What courses have you taken? How are you applying what you're learning? Now when we start to get a return on investment, when we as a profession and as organizations start to treat training as an investment and not just as an expense, then I think we can start to change some of that culture and start to have people realize that, you know what, it truly is an investment. And when I make this investment, I'm going to get rewarded for that, because somebody's going to ask, Brian, what did you learn? How are you using it? Let's get you to share that with some of your peers. And that's how we start to make some of that change.
Well, it goes back to what you were saying too, Brian, is, you know, you need to take time. We need to slow down a little bit. As leaders in organizations, and ask those questions. Okay, what's important now? Well, it's important that, you know, I need to ask Brian, what did he get out of this? And like you said, I mean, what are you going to do? How are you going to apply the knowledge? It's slowing down. And I think a lot of it too, Brian, is just recognizing, you know, and slowing down and recognizing people more, recognizing your officers more.
Absolutely. And getting to know our people and finding out, you know, where would you like to be 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Mm-hmm. Let's work together to help you down that path. But it can be as simple as if you're my supervisor, if I'm going on a 1 day seminar or workshop, or I'm going on a week long course, if you sit me down before we go, or maybe I'm the trainer from your agency and I'm going to the ILETA conference and you sit me down and say, look, Brian, you're going to ILETA in a couple of weeks. I've had a look at the schedule. These two or three classes are classes I would like you to attend because they seem to speak directly to some challenges or issues that we're facing in our organization. Mm-hmm. The rest of the conference is up to you what you take, but let's put some dates on the calendar for when you get back, and I would like to sit down and talk to you about your top two or three takeaways from every session you went to and some action items that you're going to take and some things that we can implement as an organization. Now, if every time I go on a course or a conference or a workshop, my supervisor, regardless of what level I'm at, sits me down and has that conversation with me, then I'm going to be more engaged while I'm there. I'm going to spend time reflecting afterwards on what I learned. I'm going to take better notes, and then I'm going to have to figure out how I'm going to explain it to you. When you look at the research around learning, all of those things are going to help to make the learning stickier. It's I'm going to learn it at a deeper level. Mm-hmm. And by sharing it with you, and then you create opportunities for me to talk to my peers about it, now it makes that learning even stickier, and now we're all starting to learn from my experiences. But most of the time, I go to that conference, I come back, somebody says, hey, how was the conference? Oh, it was great. Well, what did you learn? Well, you know what? You really should. You have to be there. You should go sometime. And that's where it ends.
Yeah,
so we need to change the culture around how we start to think about training. And when we start treating it as an investment and take active steps to ensure we get a return on investment, then I think it changes things for an awful lot of people within the profession as well.
Great advice. Can you tell us about Winning Mind Training?
Yes, and it's Winning Mind Training is, again, like I said, when I got into training, when I started off in training, the piece that I was involved in was the mental preparation conditioning because nobody else wanted to do it because it wasn't the cool stuff. It wasn't the kicking and fighting, and I taught all of the physical skills elements as well. But Winning Mind Training is a company that our focus is to help the men and women of law enforcement to embrace the suck, to be willing to dare to be great, and to understand life's most powerful question. So our really key elements are of a leadership program called Dare to Be Great, creating strategies to create a culture of leadership. We have a professional development program for law enforcement trainers called Excellence in Training, which is not about what to teach, but about how to teach more effectively. And then there's another program that we have called the Hero's Path to Excellence in Law Enforcement, just to get people to realize what we're talking about when we're talking about a hero, and to talk about the importance of commitment, the commitment to training, commitment to learning, commitment to family, commitment to our brother and sister officers, and to take responsibility for some of the decisions that we make. So we're a training company that's dedicated to the men and women of law enforcement, and I have the privilege of traveling around North America and working with some great people within the profession all across North America.
That's amazing. Well, Brian Willis, sir, can you give us some closing tips and suggestions for the listeners out there?
Yeah, I would encourage people to just, again, as we talked about, to remember that everyone in the profession is in a position to lead. Mm-hmm. And if you continue to ask yourself those questions, what's important now, what's the right thing to do? Invest in yourself. Read, train, and share your ideas with other people. And continue to ask those key questions. Then we're going to continue to raise the bar for our profession. Be proud of the profession that you're in. It's a great profession, a noble profession with a lot of heroic men and women who have chosen to serve through this profession. Be proud of it, but understand that what one of us does, good or bad, reflects on all of us.
That's such good advice. Where can they find you, sir? Website, social media? How can they reach out to you?
The best place would be the website. WinningMindTraining.com is our main website. I have a a membership website for law enforcement trainers. That's the excellenceintrainingacademy.com, excellenceintrainingacademy.com. But those would be the two main places. So I have an Excellence in Training blog that we post on our main website. There's also another website, lifesmostpowerfulquestion.com, that is blog posts about that philosophy around what's important now.
And I'd just like to do another plug, Brian. Go over to experiencewinx.com and see Brian's great talk on that website. You will not be disappointed. Well, Brian Willis, thank you so much, sir, for coming on the show, spending a little bit of your valuable time. I hope you and yours have a wonderful holiday season.
Thanks, Patrick. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
All right. Take care, sir.
You too.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.